Yeah, I did like your voice though. You're all like charming and upbeat now, not like you want to commit suicide anymore.
What are you talking about on my new phone?
Yeah. Hi, this is Jason.
I hope it doesn't sound like that.
Oh, it does. It sounds so upbeat. I'm so proud of you.
Better change that. Ruin my reputation.
What are you talking about? What rep? From a dark, cynical man sitting around? You reach Jason, just leave a message or not.
Storm's coming.
I mean, I think it's a great message. I think you should keep it professional. It's upbeat. Slight hint of over-enthusiasm, but not too much.
It's only a hint of over-enthusiasm if you know me.
Only a hint, huh? I think it's great. By the way, for those who are listening, you can reach Jason at 864-271-1104. Oh, wait, no, you can't. That's actually the sponsor of the show, Richard's Comics and Collectibles. He can be reached at 864-271-1104. Also found at 1214A, Lawrence Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29607. And you can also email him, too, and tell him how much you love Jason's new voicemail at ramorgan@ix.netcom.com. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I did say that. Netcom.com. I don't know what the hell that is either.
It's Angel Fire GeoCities.
That's a good way to start the show.
I guess it is, because we were talking about me being like Stephen Wright.
Basically, whoa,
like in the dregs, like ready to take a Valium.
I like that. Look at that. Stephen Wright. All right, right. Can we bring in a Stephen Weber reference too?
Sure we could. What, who are you, Blind Lemon Hackett?
Who?
That was Joe talking to Brian when Brian was wearing the glasses. He's wearing like sunglasses and acting like he was a jazz singer.
Oh.
And Joe was like, who are you, Blind Lemon Hackett? That's a Wings reference. Stephen Weber was on Wings. If you didn't know, he played Brian Hackett. He's also played in a number of other things. Studio 60 among them.
Indeed.
Rest in peace. Not him, the show.
I was about to say, I was like, what?
Nah, he's good.
I was like, we got a different topic. He told me Stephen Weber died. Damn.
He has one of the most irreverent, inappropriate Twitter feeds I've ever seen.
Wait, that dude's on Twitter? Stephen Weber's on Twitter and
yeah.
not Sean Wallace.
Sean Wallace.
Waldo Faldo.
Oh, come on, man. Are you talking about Sean Harrison?
Oh, my fault. See, that's why he needs to be on Twitter, so I can remember his name. Come on.
I don't think you'd remember his name, even if he was on Twitter.
I would totally tweet him all the time. I would send him direct messages all the time. I would watch Family Matters every day, come up with a question, and ask him. And make sure he hashtags
me. What would your first question be?
Be like Eddie.
I was about to say, my first question would just be Eddie. Like, that's it. So, Eddie, thoughts?
We got to go find Darius McCrary now? That's what we need on this show.
As long as it's the Darius McCrary that works in the produce department of the grocery store and looks up from the tomatoes with a grin on his face, wearing a green apron.
You mean nowadays, like in real life?
Oh, come on, man. I think he's on TV somewhere.
No, he's not.
I think he is, actually. I think he's on CW.
Aw, that's racist.
No, I'm saying I think he is on CW. That's not supposed to be racist. That's supposed to be accurate.
Okay, sure, whatever. Not.
Well, I guess since we're doing this, and this is Certifiable Total Recall, give out shouts. Well, what are they called? Shout-outs. To our boy Adam Jordan for sitting in with us a few weeks ago. It's been a few weeks since we recorded. Life has intervened. We hope you enjoyed both the Roy Weisenborn tribute. Thank you for all the kind comments about that, as well as a pretty cool, fun discussion about Die Hard, including Adam forgetting what live broadcasting is. I'm going to heat that chicken. Do you need a ride? Excuse me? I thought we were talking about Die Hard with a vengeance. So, is that racist? You talking about Samuel L. Jackson?
Actually, you are racist. He's been on The Young and the Restless.
Who has?
Darius McCrary.
I thought you were talking about Adam. I was like, what? Look, Adam's been on The Young and the Restless. We're going to stop this podcast right now.
I know. Hit that mofo up. He's on that. He's got three movies coming out.
Cool.
Hounds with a Z from Hell.
Nice. That's like Leprechaun Tales from the Hood all over again. I can tell right now.
Part Deuce before they went to, what was the third one? Did New York? No. Second one was in New York. That was in the Hood.
The Hood what was the fourth one.
No, fourth one was in space.
That's, you're right. Leprechaun's in space with Corbin Burnson.
I cannot remember what the. Oh, man, I gotta look this up now. Why do you let me do that?
Remember the new segment I told you we're going to end up doing pretty soon? 5 minutes of IMDb, where we just randomly look up stuff.
Let's see.
Tell the audience what we're doing, but I'm not doing it right now. I am looking up the movie history of River Phoenix. But yeah, thanks to Adam again. I thought it was awesome. We look forward to having him again. He's already said he's jacked up, kind of wants to do it again, so we will have him again in the future, as we will probably have other guests now that we've proven it is feasible for the way we like to record.
Yeah, like Sean Harrison.
Yeah, Waldo, Geraldo, Faldo, are you doing anything? I didn't think so. Give us a call.
Right?
Want us to call your agent? What agent? You talking about your grandmother?
Oh, she died after the show ended.
Stop that.
What up?
You talking about Estelle?
Oh, come on.
The one on the show.
She died, too.
No.
And Myra, unfortunately. Rest in peace.
Yeah, well, let's not talk about that. That was a terrible situation.
But did she have, like, stomach cancer or something like that?
It was something. It was some cancer.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. We just totally just took this show into another road.
We're going to have some fun today. We're going to talk about television again, something near and dear to both of our hearts. We're going to talk about two shows apiece that we are big-time fans of, and it's going to bleed over because two Andy selects I'm a big fan of, and I hope at least one of the ones that I select will be one he's a big fan of, and the other one is one that he will be a fan of once he actually gets a chance to watch it. He just hasn't had time yet, but knowing what I know about his taste in media, I think he will be a huge fan, as am I. So that'll be fun. And then we're going to combine to talk about a show that everybody who listens to us should be watching but isn't and needs the ratings and needs you to start, you know, getting the buzz out about it because it's a terrific show.
Now!
So fun, too. Yeah, now. And we'll do What's Happening Here. Were you still looking up something or are we going to do that now?
No, I'm just looking up porn.
Okay.
There's nothing dirty. Oh, wait, it's porn.
Yeah, it's not dirty, except it is.
I mean, there's some boobs, but I mean, it's nature, right?
So, anyway, what's happening? I'm not talking about porn, nature, or boobs anymore. If any of those three feature into your what's happening, move on.
No, actually, listen to us while you're doing all three of those. We may help out.
Okay, what is happening, Andy? Back in Realityville.
Back in Realityville.
Even on down to Lakerville.
The Clemson Tigers are now a miraculous 8-0, baby.
Miraculous is right. Nobody saw that coming from Taj Boyd, I can tell you that.
Hell no. Taj Boyd didn't see that coming from the beginning of the year. He's like, am I going to be up for the Heisman? No.
He played with himself in NCAA. He knows he's not good.
That's what I'm saying. I played with him. I took him out halfway through my dynasty. I put in Cole Stout, and we still didn't make it. So, yeah. Now, I'm thrilled. I'm shocked. I'm so happy with this team. Excellently well coached by both Dabo and Chad Morris. Another big thing, too, this is what's funny, is they are 8-0 for the first time in 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time that they were 8-0, they were actually going against the same team they were going to get up against this Saturday, Georgia Tech in Atlanta. So much luck. Don't want to jinx anything. But much luck to those boys. Hopefully, it will be a little easier from this on road afterwards. Because Georgia Tech's not that good.
Georgia Tech's overrated as long as you can handle the running. If you can handle the option and handle all the looks that they try to throw at you, you'll be fine.
The option, the triple option,
right.
The screens. God, I hate that.
I mean, you've already kind of gone through the meat of the schedule. I mean, anybody, even the people that listen to this that hate Clemson for whatever reason, you can't deny the how impressive it was to go through Auburn, Virginia Tech, Florida State, in three consecutive weeks. The only stumbling blocks really left are potentially Georgia Tech and South Carolina, but now that SC is going to be without Lattimore, that's certainly going to make that an easier football game. I think they probably have the easiest path to actually potentially get to a national title game of all left, because Oklahoma State still has to run through Oklahoma, Stanford's still got to run through Oregon and USC, and Boise is Boise. So if it comes down to Boise and Clemson, Clemson is likely to get that nod. So Clemson's kind of in the driver's seat. They control their own destiny, and more power to them because they've earned it. Sammy Watkins is an absolute beast. And Boyd is playing like somebody that deserves the hype that he's been getting over these past few weeks. Six touchdowns on Saturday. I was watching that game from the press box, and in the third quarter, it was 24-17. The next time I looked up, it was 59 points on the board for Clemson. That's not the first time that they've put up big-time points in the fourth quarter of a football game this year.
Nope. They didn't even put up points in the fourth quarter the past game.
Yeah, it was all like late third.
Yeah, it was 59-24. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, and then they took out the first team, and they're like, "All right, we're good." So that's amazing. Good props. And again, you said it right. I mean, you're a guy who actually you don't even like Clemson because of your NC State heritage. So
I don't despise them like a lot of people. Well, I mean, I don't despise them like Carolina fans, but yeah, and you know, we have our little textile bowl rivalry and all that. But I mean, I have a quiet respect for the aura of Clemson football, despite you know how it's been probably for most of the last 15 years, but. There's nothing you can say right now. I mean, there's not really any excuses to be made. When OU goes down and Wisconsin goes down and all these teams are dropping like flies and Clemson continues to win, especially an ACC team, and the ACC's been so maligned over these past few years and they've run through all the powers basically, there's nothing you can say but props. Yeah. And, you know, there's no hatred to be had now. This team has proven its worth, in my opinion. They're a good football team.
You have to think, too, if they are – if they get the number four, which, you know, all hope, you know, here's the concept I like from Dabo, is it's one game at a time.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking at the national championship. They're not looking at the ACC championship. They're looking at one game at a time. They are right now 8-0, hoping to be 9-0. That's it. No more ands, ifs, or buts. That is it. And that's perfect, said, and done. And that's what a lot of, like, good coaching mentalities are, especially with, what was it, Sean Payton back the year they won the Super Bowl? And Reggie
right.
Bush at like week 5 or 6 went on some radio station and was just running out the mouth saying like, "Yeah, we're going to be undefeated. We're going all the way." Next day, all these reports came out. Sean Payton like reeled him back in, sat him down. He's like, "Look, you need to shut up. You need to not make us a target. We got shit to do. So go over there. Here's a picture book, and go color." So no, I don't know. Reggie Bush, can't hate him, even though his Dolphins. Stink! Oh, the Dolphins stink! By the way, congratulations, your boys picking up your second win?
Yeah, second win, and I watched most of that game, unfortunately. And I liked Tim Tebow, but the first 57 minutes of that game were really embarrassing to watch. I ended up putting my head down in the third quarter because some of those passes were just flat awful. They were 7-8 yards pass receivers. Demaryius Thomas, who's a tall, athletic receiver, nowhere close to be able to get these balls. When it came down to the time when he had to make plays, he does. It is, however, against a winless football team, so we have to put it in perspective. I am rooting for Tim Tebow, but there are certainly some issues that he needs to try and work out. Losing Brandon Lloyd, obviously,
Thank
didn't
you.
Help. And we were trying to get rid of Eddie Royal at the same time. We weren't going to be able to re-sign Brandon Lloyd, which is why we ended up taking basically nothing for him. And meanwhile, the Cincinnati Bengals get two first-round picks for Carson Palmer, who can't pull off 3 and 5-step drops in decent amount of time anymore since the injury. So, I like Carson. I hope that works out for him. But that is a lot of money, considering Brandon Lloyd was the receiving leader last year and arguably has the best hands in football. If not him, I'd say Larry Fitzgerald. But, you know, you guys – or, well, I say you guys. I know you have two teams. But that's a heist. Really, I mean, that's exactly what you guys needed. We'll see what the Rams.
Oh no, they're still awful.
Like. Still really terrible football
they're
team. Don't get me wrong. When somebody that came in that had done basically nothing to this point, DeMarco Murray, who was replacing the injured Felix Jones, comes in there and has an almost he was 40 yards shy of the NFL rushing record for one game. That's not a good sign for your defense. Your defense at this point is pretty much a swinging gate. Like Laurinaitis is out there and there's nobody else.
Yeah, pretty much. They have no. No defensive line. And it's a 3-4 defense. I mean, it's on 4-3 defense. Really?
Yeah,
not so much. But they didn't get obliterated as much as the freaking Colts last night on Sunday Night Football. Oh, my God. That was just like Drew Brees on Madden 12 on, like, just crack.
Jim Rome called that a ritual killing on national television.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it was. That was Brees not being happy about them losing that game to the Buccaneers last week. Maybe not getting the kind of respect because it's like Brees doesn't even really get talked about anymore because of the god that is Aaron Rodgers. And there's, you know, Unfortunately for Breeze, all the hype that Aaron Rodgers gets is well deserved. He's by far the best player in the NFL today. But they were clearly not happy, clearly wanted to make a statement, and I actually thought it was borderline offensive because they're dealing with Curtis Painter and a defense that's, you know, lost a couple of key players for the season to injury. There's nothing going on for Indianapolis. 62 points, really, guys? Was that really necessary? Like, did that really have to be done? Did you have to win by 55? It's not the BCS. Your margin of victory doesn't count.
I mean, it's the NFL. It's not college football. A 62-point game happens like maybe once a year, every maybe 2 years.
Yeah, it's not an annual thing, that's for sure.
No, hell no. This is not college football. This is not like, you know, Oklahoma rolling in and like Bowling Green, Kentucky. Speaking of which, how was your first time in the booth for your Western Kentucky
It was
Hilltoppers?
pretty awesome.
There you go.
I was quite pleased. It was homecoming. There was a lot of stuff going on. Got up to the press box a couple hours early. Got my first ever media packet and got to see a lot of the cool things that go on. Between quarters, we get brought updates on scores nationally and scores by quarter, stats by quarter, all that good stuff. So we have information to say on the air and, you know, have a great vantage point basically on the 50-yard line. Nice and high. The glass in front of you gets opened up, so you're looking straight out onto the field with nothing blocking the view. And, you know, you just sit there, and hopefully you have somebody with you that knows what they're doing and is good at it and passionate about it. And luckily for me, I have Jeremy Brown, who may or may not be listening to this, who was fantastic. He did the play-by-play. I did the color analysis. You know, he knows the formations, knows it all. He's got it all down pat, has an extreme passion for sports after the game. Some of us went back to his apartment, watched some football that night, and he had Colts stuff all over his house, like a fat head for the Colts logo. He had a Joseph Addai poster in his main room. You've got to be a big, and I do mean big, Indianapolis Colts fan to have a Joseph Addai poster in your house. Peyton Manning? Yeah, I understand. Johnny
Reggie
Unitas? I
Wayne,
understand.
Marvin
Reggie Wayne? I get it.
Harrison.
Marvin Harrison? I understand. And remember, I said Harvin Harrison.
Yeah,
Because I don't know who that other guy is.
you ain't gonna get shanked
Yeah, I'm not going to be a chalk
too,
outline
so.
outside of a Philadelphia bar. But, you know, Dallas Clark, I even understand. But, you know, and he stood up for a die when I said, wow,
Bob
you are
Sanders.
a big fan. Yeah, exactly. Of course, he plays for the Chargers now because Andy's out for the season again.
No, is he?
Yes.
That's not funny.
They're
It is.
saying this might be that might be the end of his career this time.
Yeah, no joke. You think? He only lasts like 4 games each season.
He played like he was 4 inches bigger than he was. That he was just so much taller than he was and so much wider than he was. And
He always does. He's only like 5'9"
yeah,
in with the help.
he went at people like bullets and, you know, wasn't able to pull out of it. But it's cool doing color. I obviously had done plenty of play-by-play in color in my professional wrestling days, but this is a completely different animal. There were some quick snaps. There were some fast-moving offense, things like that. Had to stay on my toes, look at some defensive formations, find out what's going on in the trenches, and try to get that across to the people. And afterwards felt like it was really successful. And then I got to go to the press conference after the game, see how that works. Got to meet Willie Taggart and talk to the team a little bit and hear their answers to the questions that were being asked by the local media. I actually could have asked questions myself. I didn't. I just kind of wanted to sit and observe what was going on. But I was dusted up in a nice shirt and tie and khakis. The ladies were impressed. I was kicking it on the regular. But Taggart was cool. He made some good jokes about Harbaugh. Harbaugh's father coached us, or coached Western Kentucky for a long time. While Jim was still playing from 94 to 01, he was an unpaid certified assistant to the team who actually helped recruit the 02 squad, which went on to win the Division II at that time national championship. So he has a big-time tie to this area and to this team. And if you want further than that, Willie Taggart was a running backs coach from 2007 to 2009 at Stanford under Harbaugh, who tutored Toby Gerhart, who you may know, who was a Heisman finalist, third place, I think is where he ended. Now, I think he ended up finishing second, as a matter of fact, and now plays for the Vikings in a backup role behind Adrian Peterson. So that was cool. And he joked about how he intentionally didn't shake hands with Louisiana Lafayette's Mark Hudspeth anywhere near the way Jim Schwartz got it from his buddy Jim. And he said that Jim was, you know, had texted him, congratulated him on the win and all that kind of stuff. But it was good. Willie, it's hard to see Willie smile sometimes because the team hasn't been good. and this is his second year, and he was kind of under fire because it was an 18-game home losing streak, but two-game winning streak on the road, and then come back and beat a 6-1 football team whose only loss was to Oklahoma State, who was ranked 32 in the BCS and had votes in the top 25 in the Harris poll. So this was a big win, and you know now we move back to the road, and then in 2 weeks I'll be doing it again for the Florida International game. That's another conference game. We're now second in the Sun Belt, one fourth down and one that Arkansas State converted away from being in sole possession of first place in the Sun Belt. So interesting times for the Hilltoppers, and it was fun to do that and get that experience, and I look forward to you know seeing where this is going to go and continuing to do as much of that as they will have me do. So that was a lot of fun.
Sun Belt, is that good? How many teams are in that division?
Sun Belt Conference is, I'm not exactly sure, 10, 11 teams? I may be wrong. It may only be 9.
Yeah, and you guys are on top of that.
Well, we're second place right now.
Okay, well, you guys are second best at that.
Yeah, way to bail yourself out there.
But, no, I'm saying.
All right, so that was cool. That was fun. What was I going to say? Oh,
you gotta go.
In a couple of what's happenings this week today, Coldplay's new album released. For those of you who like it, there's a negative stigma attached to Coldplay. I don't like necessarily the band, like what they do outside or whatever, their lives, stuff that they say, that kind of nonsense. Never really had a problem with the music. For a while, I was a big fan until it became fashionable not to be, I guess, and just started listening to other stuff. But I have heard the new album. I actually picked up a copy of it today. It is quite good if you like Coldplay, I guess. But you know, there's some good, catchy stuff on it. I listened to it while I was taking care of some other work. Enjoyed it. It's a good title. Tomorrow, and I know Andy's going to
be... Captain America!
Captain America releases on Blu-ray and DVD. If you get it at Best Buy, there's a special cover for the Blu-ray edition that has like an old comic from the 40s
nice.
On the backside. And then there's a 3D version also. I think I'm going to stick with the standard Blu-ray this time around. Also tomorrow, Battlefield 3, which I'm actually not going to get. I just don't think I care. I know it's going to be great. I just don't care. I got
huge...
the game I wanted last week.
What was that?
That was Batman.
Kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Batman fucking rules.
And I've gotten to play all of maybe an hour of it.
Because I've only played about an hour of it.
I said I've gotten to play about an hour of it.
Oh, I think it's anything but.
No, I said all but, you know, all, you know, I've gotten to play.
Oh. Yeah. Gotcha. I tuned you out of butt.
Basically, I got to the Two-Face hanging by his feet thing.
Oh, we say he's Catwoman?
Yeah, I got to that, and then like right after that where you're going to find the Joker.
Yeah.
I got...
Oh, you're exactly right where I'm at.
Like right where Harley Quinn stops you in the doorway is about where I'm at.
Yeah, you're exactly right where I'm at, because I got a little past that, except for I started one of the side missions with Bane.
See, I'm playing around, you know, I see the like Riddler marks and stuff, and I'm messing around, see how they work. They're a little different from the first game. Looks like it's going to take a little, you know, some gadgets and things like that to make some of it work. I'll tell you what, just in the first hour and a half, I think it's one of the prettiest games I've ever seen. Like, cutscenes are magnificent. And I know if you don't have the online pass, you can't see it. But, like, even the beginning where you're Catwoman for the first 2 minutes or so, it's all just so well done. I like the voice acting a lot. And that's not really a big surprise if you're a big fan of the animated series or whatever. But I'm just looking forward to getting more into it and playing more and maybe playing some challenge maps, some multiplayer and stuff. And I will tell you this, the collector's edition is so beautiful.
It is just gorgeous. The box is ridiculous. What's all included is just
it's
phenomenal.
Absurd. It's absurd. They could have kept Gotham Knight.
Nah, I want to put that somewhere in my bathroom.
You could have given us year one. I ended up getting that, but
nice.
Haven't gotten to watch it yet, though.
I haven't either. I'm looking at the Captain America special edition right now, as you were saying that on Best Buy's website. I think it'd be better if they actually just put a picture instead of like Evans in the Captain America suit. They should have put him in that cloth suit when he was a dancer. That'd been awesome.
The like puffed up old school.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's what they should have made him look like anyway. That's what the real.
I concur.
You know.
I look forward to having a copy of that movie. Unlike you, I wasn't able to go back to the theater and see it, so I've still only seen it the one time. And as you guys who listen to this that who know me or have heard me talk about it before, I'm a big time fan of the Captain America comics of the last 8 years or so, particularly, and so I look forward to getting to see it again and maybe in better definition this time around. But really good movie. If you didn't see it, at least rent it, or you know, I guess Netflix won't have it for a couple of months, but find a way to see that movie. I know Andy agrees, considering he saw it at least 3 times that I know of at the theater.
Four times.
Damn. What are you, 12?
It was good. So good. So good.
And
anyway,
you kept having different people that needed to see it.
Oh, exactly. I had to. And I didn't tell any of them how many times I saw the movie. So they may know now, but oh well. Not ashamed of it whatsoever. I don't care. But topic at hand, shows that we love and show, and a show that you guys should be watching. What that show is, you'll find out next.
Especially if you like the randomness that we have. Well, I know what you're about to do.
What?
You're about to do the Mike and Mike thing, weren't you?
No, maybe, but I'm not in the mood for Subway. I'm
Scott
on my
Van
last...
Pelt, Ryan Russillo, ESPN Radio.
I'm on my last day at detox, so you have no idea how much I want to sub. And I don't eat bread that much. But
speaking of detox,
by the way,
I gotta handle something in my box over here.
You know what I'm saying? What?
Molly.
Oh, man, your cat? Ugh, gross.
So why don't you kick off the discussion real quick with your first show, and I will return here in about 30 seconds.
All right, live, recording live. I love it, don't you, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, you got to let them in. You got to create, as Matthew said on news radio, in radio we create what's called a word picture so that they kind of see what's going on.
So your 30-pound cat is dropping a dump.
Not a 30-pound cat, but finished dropping one, and I need to get it out of here before I pass out while trying to describe one of my shows.
Oh, come on. She's not that bad. She's just learning from you.
Dude, this thing is potent. Talk about your first show. I gotta go.
What did you feed her? The other cat? Jeez.
I think she had a few too many pieces of snack.
Would you feed her the McRib?
I don't even feed myself the McRib.
That's a shame. I've been detoxing for 7 days. I've had nothing but fruits and vegetables. And like, I sort of cheated yesterday, but it's okay. But still, 7 days, fruits and vegetables, just water, no caffeine, no beer, no wine, nothing. I am on a wire right now. I need something in my system that will stick to my ribs, and ribs are delicious. Just saying. But anyway.
All right, first show.
First show. Wow, did you really just wipe all that up? What'd you do, fling it in your toilet? Oh, I guess not. Anyway, so first show, How I Met Your Mother. Been on now, this is the 7th season, and you actually were the guy that got me into the show, where you just kind of, we were sitting around one day, you got into it, I don't know exactly how you got into it, but we were just sitting around, and like I think like weekday night, and you were like, hey, check out the show, it's pretty good. I started watching it, and I remember from the very beginning, the first episode is just the story's building, the great date, the whole... Oh, I love you on the first date, something you've never seen, that chemistry between all 5 main characters and Rajesh, so great. And then when you get to the very end, you're thinking this Ted Robin thing is going on, and all of a sudden it's like, and that, kids, is how I met your Aunt Robin. And you freak out, the audience freaks out, the kids freak out. It's just from that point, I knew that show was just, there's something special about that show. There's something different, and it has a lot of character, it has a lot of depth, it has a lot of those moments that you and me were talking about a little bit ago, like this past episode, where it's got those heartfelt moments where you really, you either adapt to the character, you feel for the character, or you just kind of mush over what's going on the screen.
Mush?
I don't know, I do. Like, when I saw, what was it, Ted's foot, and it had the boy thing on there, I was like, oh, that's really cool. That's classy. Because I thought they were going to, like, hold out and wait for it. Like, no, we're just going to give it to you now. So I did like to, the other week, they actually finally brought back Victoria from season 1, which I always kind of mentioned to you. I was like, I wonder if they're ever going to bring that back. Because that was a kind of big part in the first season. And they did. And to me, I think they did a really good interpretation of her coming back, how much they meant to each other, and the little answer at the end, where he's like, you know what? I do want to know if we would have worked out. And she just kind of let him down gently. Obviously, there's so much there. The great chemistry between Marshall and Lily and their love for him, like the minute they come on screen and he proposes to them getting married in season two, to him going through job trials, her through going through credit debt, their first house together, his new job, him graduating, just so many, and now they're having a baby, so many different little layers in that show that kind of like it appeals to more and more audiences as opposed to like a show. And it's like Seinfeld, which Seinfeld's one of the greatest shows of all time, and we already did a podcast on that to prove that. But it's not like geared towards really just one general audience. It kind of caters to different people. So you have that, but to kind of not dilute and scare away like others who are single, you have Barney and Ted in some of the seasons. And just those stories are just freaking ridiculous too. Like, you know, the Naked Man story, the Playbook, just some of the highlights there that I absolutely love. Let me take a breather. You chime in.
I would say the brilliance of How I Met Your Mother is in the juxtaposition of the crazy and the incredibly well-executed emotional depth of some of the other stories, like what you're just talking about, The Naked Man. Every once in a while, it'll go too far. See that movie, what was it, The Wedding?
Oh, yeah, the Wedding Bride.
Yeah, The Wedding Bride, that kind of stuff. There've been some times when it's gone a little off the deep end. But when the funny is funny and the emotion is at its best, that show is able to convey two separate emotions simultaneously and make you laugh and cry. And that's what the best in media overall can do. The best in plays do that. The best in dramas do that. You know, the best plays on Broadway do that. The best in TV, the best in film, all that kind of have both. Kind of like, you know, a recent example would be something like 50-50. 50-50's got some great comedic moments, but it's also got some incredibly well-executed, heavy-hitting, dramatic moments.
Oh, man. By the way, for anyone listening to this, if you still got 50-50 in your theater, you still haven't seen that, you are missing out.
Yeah, you need to get there and see that. You really do. But yeah, that
another one of my favorite episodes. Go ahead.
Well, no, the only thing I was going to say is, you know, you were mentioning the callback that they did this season to, what was her name again?
Victoria,
and it was well executed. They do that kind of thing. They'll introduce you to something, and they'll say, more on that later, sometimes. And sometimes they won't even do that, and then it will come back up into the story. It's been a very, very rich story. There have been a couple of down spots, but overall, that show is a treasure. That show's been handled incredibly well. The chemistry, not just between Marshall and Lily, but between all five of the leads.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they're all on camera together, there's never a ham-up spot where one person's really trying to upstage the others. They just all look like friends, and they all get along like friends. The scenes in the bar, the scenes in the apartment, all that kind of stuff are good. And then when they go off the deep end, the best stuff off the deep end is the stuff that generally centers around Barney.
Yeah, absolutely.
Neil Patrick Harris is just – that's the role he was born to play. It really is. No offense to Doogie Howser, which, of course, he was born to play as well, but – just the Barney Stinson character is going to go down as, you know, on the level of that George Costanza. He's going to be the one everybody remembers from How I Met Your Mother. And this season, particularly, I think they've done a really cool thing with the duck tie. Big
yeah.
fan of the ducky tie. I like the fact that they're not going away from it and they're going to keep it through the season. I think that's a really cool thing that every time I see the ducky tie, it reminds me of the reason why I like How I Met Your Mother.
Can you... Then do you remember, they still have one more slap bet, or is that done with?
I want to say that's done.
No, that's not what that is, right, because it was the one with Chris Elliott.
Right.
Because that was the slaps giving too. Okay, yeah. But another big episode that I really, really love is one of these subtle ones where it dealt with a three-part storytelling where Lily and Marshall were across country from each other. Like, she went to go visit someone in Seattle. He was here in New York. And I think Robin had something going on. I can't exactly remember what with Barney's story. I think – no, it wasn't the resume. But gets to the point. It was three different stories. Okay, yeah, because it was the puzzles episode. It was the one where Barney and Ted were running puzzles or running McLaren's for a night, and they called it puzzles.
Right, yeah.
Because what's the barkeep's name?
The barkeep?
The bartender?
The
Carl.
bartender?
Carl.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, you know, don't do anything stupid kind of thing. And he let them run the bar. I can't remember what the hell Robin was doing this episode. But she, at one point, was like driving Marshall to the airport, and they did it in three separate days. But by the end of it, the point of it was they were trying to see if Marshall and Lily had gotten to that point in a relationship where it gets kind of stale, where it's not new, it's not, you know, exciting anymore, it gets kind of bland. But they prove at the very end that relationships don't have to be that way. That you can keep a friend, you can keep little traditions going. Like his tradition was always calling her in the afternoon, letting her know what he ate during the day, and she did the same thing, and, you know, letting her know what's going on. Just simple little things in a relationship. And at the end of the show, she's sitting in the airport thinking he didn't make it, and he got there a day early in one little story, but then, like, they kind of melded it at the end where he actually did go to the right day, and the band came out, played a song, and he came out with a limo driver hat, her name, and was like counting off what he had for lunch and kept it fresh. And then at the very end, he goes, oh, wait a minute, does this mean I have to bring a marching band every time I pick up the episode? She's like, yes! She's like, damn it. So those moments make that show so good, because it's hard to have that connection with the audience where you don't think of these guys as Allison Hannigan and Jason Segel. You actually go with it that it's, you know, Marshall Erickson and Lily Erickson. You know, you go with it for a little bit. So it's so believable.
And there's also the fact that a show like this would not work anywhere nearly as well if it was not cast as well as it has been.
No,
from
absolutely.
Top to bottom, from Josh Radnor to Segel to Allison Hannigan to Neil Patrick Harris to, why did her name just go away?
Smulders, sorry.
Yeah, Kobe Smulders. I mean, they all match up so well, like we were talking about their chemistry on screen. They play off each other really, really well. There is, I think that one of the underlying things, and you just illustrated it by that description of Lily and Marshall, is the thing that kind of dominates Lily and Marshall's relationship. They've touched on superstition a couple of different times. Even in the pilot, they talked about the olives theory.
Right.
And some of that kind of stuff.
Right.
I think one of the everlasting themes from that show is that nothing defines a relationship except the people in it. Mm-hmm. That things that, you know, you don't have to worry about doing this, making it stale or whatever like that. If the people are meant to be together, they're meant to be together. And Marshall and Lily went through one thing that was really hard to watch as a viewer. And then since then, it's been, you know, all gravy or whatever, but you can clearly tell, and they acted in such a way that those two people were supposed to be together, and maybe not just as their characters, but those two actors were designed to be put together somehow as a couple, because they are flawless on camera together.
They fit so well, and just the little inside jokes on screen is ridiculous. I even told you about that one episode where I can't remember what it was, what they were doing, but Lily and Marshall, they have apparently like a secret like sex code word.
Yes.
Or like, let's get out of here code word. And then I remember one episode, she's like, Barney's like, oh please, like, you guys think you're settled with that? What do you mean? We totally settled. Flashback, and it's the, you know, Marshall talking, and all of a sudden Lily goes, rhinoceros, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Like, just in the middle of his sentence. I actually told that to my girlfriend Kristen, and we were in Charleston a couple weeks ago. We have dinner with my brother, and it was around like 10:39. We were both just really tired. You know, we had a road trip. I had worked all day. She had been doing things all day too. And we drive, we have dinner, and then we're sitting around, then we're really tired. And she goes, rhinoceros? Rhinoceros? I didn't catch it at first. I was like, what? And I was like, oh, I felt so bad. So yeah, but no, there's stuff like that. And then there's like the stuff that's so comedic and it's just so funny to watch and it's so easy to kind of grasp. Like the one with season 3 with the crazy hot scale. And
oh, yeah, that's
with blah blah.
Yeah, that's classic.
It makes sense because it was one of those times where they kind of remember, oh, yeah, this is a guy telling a story in 30 years. And in the very beginning, he's like, kids, I was dating this girl. Oh, crap. What was her name? You know, it's been 30 years. I can't remember all this. You know, for the sake of the story, let's call her, everybody, this is blah, blah. So it's like the whole episode, they just keep calling her blah blah. And then there's episode two where he censored himself and like the whole innuendo of eating a sandwich, meaning like smoking a joint.
Right.
That's great. That's classic. And just, I don't think I can, as much as the show has gotten bad at points of season three and four, I still have never like veered away and be like, I can't watch the show anymore. I'm done. Can't. So I'm still on board. I want to get to the end. I want to see what happens. I think they're actually getting to that point where it's going to be really good now with where it seems getting more like a real story sense, where at the end of the Victoria episode, she tells Ted, "You know what your real problem is? It's Robin." He's like, "No, I'm over." He's like, "No, you're not." And it's clear. And until you guys figure that out, nothing's going to be changed.
And then, of course, Saget comes across with a narrator and says, "And she was right." And we had to get to that moment or whatever. And basically, he's talking about him and Barney. So it's like, that's going to come to a head. I think that's probably going to form the crux of the end of this season, along with the likely birth.
Birth. I can also see this scenario going, and I hate to be wrong again because I actually really did like the Dawn story until that just went all to shit hell at the end of season or middle. Was it the beginning of season six, end of season five? Her co-anchor or whatever was just a
Yeah.
ass. I just could not stand that story at the end. But yeah, the I could definitely see something going on with the Cal Penn thing. I like him on that show.
It's interesting, so do
I
I.
really
We kind
do.
of joke about Cal Penn, not that we have anything against him, but
No, absolutely
it's just something about the Cal Penn, the name.
not.
It's like, what do you mean, Cal Penn? And like it turns into a joke every time,
That
but
guy from 24, really?
oh yeah, he also was Harold Kumar, right? I forgot. But no, I do too. I think it fits. It's interesting. Obviously, it's not gonna last, but it's cool to have.
You don't think
I think
so?
he plays pretty well. I mean, she's not gonna end up with Cal Penn, is what I'm saying.
I can kind of see that. I can see something where maybe he goes somewhere and she decides to go with him because she's an anchor. She always wants to go on adventures, you know, like that drift between season three and four when she went to Japan or whatever. And then the one where she broke up with Ted or they broke up with each other and then she went to Argentina and met Gael.
Right.
So I can see something like that happening. I really can because one, Smulders is getting kind of big now. She's going to be in the new Avengers movie next year, so I can see her
Right.
taking some time off and not pull a Jonathan Taylor Thomas and make one movie and then clunk and fail afterwards.
I would agree, except that the Barney wedding thing, I don't think that they're going to do that without her, and I don't think Cal Penn's going to be there at that point. Doesn't mean that he might not show back up or they might not allude to him. I just don't think he's going to be around when this show ends, one way or
No,
the other.
maybe not. But it could be another thing where it'd be like a Paul Rudd on Friends, where he makes that significant like connection with that character, and then he pops on occasionally. Then towards the last part of the season, he'll come back more full in stride, and you know, here and there. I can see that. I can see him being like the Paul Rudd of the show.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because he's a big enough star, he brings that attention, but he's not distracting by any
He's
means.
not going to be on every episode.
No, absolutely not.
Even with his movie coming out.
That's gonna make some money.
Yeah, it is. A lot of stoners out there.
Whatever. Don't hate. You experimented.
Well, the thing I'm saying is, like, this whole thing's going to be kind of an inside joke on 3D and, like, being really over the top with the sex and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's going to be funny on his face, but a lot of people are just going to be stoners. They'll be like, whoa, when they put a thumbs up near the camera that looks like it's going through the screen. It's going to be kind of terrible, but I actually think I might go see that just to have some fun.
So give it a shot, ladies and gentlemen. It is still on at Monday nights at 8:30?
Eight
Because Two Broke
o'clock.
Girls comes on 8 o'clock. Oh, okay. Sorry. 8 o'clock Monday nights. And you can obviously catch reruns on Fox, on CW, on, I think.
FX now has a contract.
That's right, they do. I was trying to remember which cable network does, because TBS has
Big
Big
Bang.
Bang Theory, yeah. So give it a shot, folks. It's a great show. Still going on strong, I think.
Oh yeah, I think it's actually stronger now than it was 2 seasons ago.
Oh,
I think the
definitely.
last 2 seasons, or this season and last season, are both better than the season before. I think it's tipping the right direction rather than the wrong direction.
Yeah, last half of four and a lot of five can go eat my ass. So, by the way, this podcast is explicit.
Hopefully not as explicit as the last one. That was a little out of hand. I apologize.
Yeah, well, eating my ass is explicit too, so.
Okay, that's twice.
What's your show?
I've got, well, you know me. I got 8,000 shows, but I'm not going to be that guy. Do I want to do comedy or do I want to do drama?
A little bit from column A, a little bit from column B.
Well, I'm going to have to think about comedy, so I'll do Sons of Anarchy.
All right.
Without trying my best not to spoil anything that's going on, because I know you're planning to watch it, and I'm looking forward to that, because I look forward to those discussions. But Sons of Anarchy is a show that is kind of, if you're not watching it, you should be, but third season did average 4.9 million viewers a week, which made it FX's highest rated series ever. It was renewed for a fourth season, which is on now, and has already been renewed for a full fifth season. The premiere, actually, of this season was the highest rated show FX has ever had. So it has caught on. It kind of surprised me because I caught it late. And the reason I caught it late was it is about motorcycles, and I thought they were, let's see, can I come up with a clever way to say this? No, I thought they were dumb.
Aww.
D-U-M, dumb. I thought they were stupid. And the main reason is because of the culture of the West Coast choppers and the American choppers and, you know, the dumb, you know, everybody wears the t-shirt with the cross and Orange County and all that. It just didn't make any sense to me.
You are so going to get shanked.
Probably. So, you know, I kept at the time and I have and I'm so glad that I've done this. I've gotten away. I just don't read critical response anymore at all. And that's thanks mainly to my co-host who finally told me, you're ruining your own enjoyment. And so I've been able to kind of break my
habit. That would be me.
Last week I actually looked once because I wanted to see thoughts on one thing that I wasn't watching. And I happened to see some thoughts on something that it was new that I was watching that I love that this particular critic who I have a lot of respect for didn't like. And all of his fans, of course, underneath were like, oh, you're so right, you're so right. And I'm like, no, you're wrong. And I just got off the site. I'm like, this is why you don't do this anymore. So I bailed out. So I decided I was going to watch Sons of Anarchy this summer between seasons three and before the four premiere because it just, you know, Katie Sagal was called the best actress on TV, and I've been a big fan of hers for a while and wanted to see it, but I just didn't think I would have any interest in this show about a motorcycle club. Boy, was I wrong. I watched the entire run of the series in a day and a half. If you have watched the show, you know that is a pretty nice feat. I actually watched four episodes like 3-4 days before I ended up sitting down that weekend and watching all the rest of it because I couldn't stop. It's a brilliant show. It really is. It is about a motorcycle club. It is about a tight-knit motorcycle club called, Andy, you want to take this one?
Sam Crow?
They are called the Sons of Anarchy. Sam Crow stands for Sons of Anarchy Motorcycle Club Redwood Original.
That too.
They are, you know, like I said, they're tight-knit. They all have their own families and all that kind of stuff, but they get together to do business. It was started by a man named John Teller. The show starts, John Teller is dead. His son Jackson, short Jax, J-A-X, is kind of come to a crossroads in his own life. He's in the motorcycle club as well. He's actually the vice president underneath Clay Morrow, who was the other founder of Sam Crow. That's played by Ron Perlman. He's still alive. They have a day business that everybody in the club works for that is basically a towing service, a automobile repair, and it's called Teller Morrow. So it kind of fits in. And then they have the Sam Crow, you know, the clubhouse and the, you know, the decision room and all that kind of stuff there. So the thing is that Jackson is going through a tumultuous period where he is confused and unsure about whether or not he wants to be involved in the club or whether or not, you know, what's going to go on in his own life, because the club is involved deeply in crime and it has been involved in crime for some time, revolving around weapons trades involving the Irish Republican Army and other intermediaries in the United States and abroad. So they're dealing with that. They end up dealing with Russians and all this other kind of stuff. So long story short, he's, you know, come to the decision where, do I want a life or do I want to be this guy? And it's very, very similar to some of the same kind of struggles that Christopher Moltisanti goes through on The Sopranos. And I've said this and written it many times, that the comparison to Sons of Anarchy is The Sopranos. And it was ironic. I said that, and then I watched like a DVD feature. And what it said when they were doing an SOA trailer was, this is the best show since The Sopranos, New York Times. And I was like, wow, interesting. But basically, there's a cross between The Sopranos and West Side Story. Basically, take the motorcycle club part out of this group. It is a mafia. That's all it is. It's a gun-running mafia that, you know, controls this small town in Northwest California, basically, runs roughshod over it, and has enemy gangs, enemy mafia, enemy motorcycle clubs that they have to deal with. And then on top of that, they all have their own, you know, female relationships and things like that. The main one being Ron Perlman's wife, who's played by Katie Sagal, who also happens to be Jax Teller's mother, because she actually left his father for Clay Morrow. So there's all sorts of things that kind of play into this show. It's also one of those shows kind of like Lost, where anybody can die. So you watch it and you're like, well, this guy's a main star. He's not going anywhere. Well, that's not entirely true. You know, they big things happen very often. Sopranos was kind of, an ultimate water cooler show. As they say, you would talk about it with three or four of your friends, what happened that Sunday night. Sons is exactly the same way. Every three, four episodes, something really major happens on SOA that makes you want to, you know, makes you want to talk about it. Did you see that? Like, just this past week, something happened that was huge. If you saw the show, it involved the character Juice. I won't go any further than that, but happened right at the end of the show, and it was just like, wow. Like, it just stunned me, and it was painful that I had to wait until tomorrow night to see the next episode. End of the seasons are handled as good or better than any show I've ever seen. They leave you salivating for the next season almost every time. And the other brilliant thing outside of the casting, Charlie Hunnam, who plays Jax Teller, who's actually from across the pond, you would never be able to tell it. And it's just, it's mind-blowing how good he is. Perlman's unbelievable. Katie Sagal is far and above the best actress on television. And then all the, you know, side people like Kim Coates, who was actually on Entourage for this last season. He was the guy who killed himself when Vince was outside his bathroom. He's a regular on SOA. Ryan Hurst, there's so many I could go on and on, but it's just such a great cast from top to bottom. But one of the other things, and Sopranos was known for this as well, is that the music used on this show is not only perfectly chosen, but it is epic, especially when they do little montages at the end of certain very, very important episodes where you'll hear an entire song, 4 or 5 minutes, no dialogue, and you'll just see things happening that kind of continue to move time along. You get to see people thinking about decisions and aftermath of decisions, things like that. The stuff that they have chosen is just unbelievable. John the Revelator closes the first season, and it's just one of the most magnificent 8 minutes of TV I've ever seen. I just sat there and couldn't move. So SOA, it is, like I said, people have taken to it now. It's continuing to grow. Again, it's already been renewed for a fifth season next year. Fourth season's got six more episodes to go. It is an absolute must-watch. The five best shows on television: Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Sons of Anarchy, Game of Thrones, and then the fifth one's probably Justified. That would be my order right now. And Breaking Bad, Mad Men, and Sons of Anarchy are not separated by much, if anything. It's amazing how great that show is, so you should definitely check it out. FX, Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central Time, or you can watch full episodes on FX.com. First three seasons are out on DVD and Blu-ray. That to me is one of the best shows of the last, you know, definitely one of the best shows I've ever seen, but I would say it's arguably as compelling a drama as has ever been conceived on television. It is a beautiful, beautiful show.
I definitely want to get into it. You just made the argument there why I should definitely watch into it. So hopefully that'll work for other people too. Speaking of which, you dropped Name Drop, the show I want to talk about for drama, definitely got the Mad Men fever this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all thanks to Netflix. So, and my brother.
Who just posted their worst quarter ever and lost 500,000 subscribers because of that idiotic decision.
What was happening again?
The decision where you used to pay a flat rate and you were able to get DVDs sent to you and have the instant queue. And now you pay separately or whatever, and they up the money that you had to pay per month.
Beautiful.
Like, people basically rioted, and the guy finally came out, and he's like, all right, screwed up, my fault. He's like, yeah, it was your fault, because you didn't even ask anybody. He just kind of made a unilateral decision without looking and talking to his audience and finding out, you know, do they think they're paying enough for this service? And it turned out they were, because literally 500,000 people dropped the service over the last 2 months. And now they're going to try and build them back by incentive programs and things like that. But if you have Netflix, Mad Men, which has now been available for what, 2.5 months?
Something like that. I had the first three seasons on DVD. My brother actually graciously gave me the first three on DVD for Christmas. And I was able to watch the fourth season I didn't have on Netflix. So thank you for that. But yet, I remember I popped in the first DVD, first season, and it was realistic to me. It was kind of slow, and I didn't know if I was going to give it another shot, but I kept watching it. And the more I watched, the more I got hooked, in a sense, because it's not like it's one major story going on really throughout each season, kind of like a traditional drama. Like Your Sons of Anarchy, but to me, it's just something's weird where it just feels like it's the most down to earth gritty drama there is, where it's realistic. It's not over the top. It's not, you know, absurd in your face. It's not loud. It's just kind of chill, but at the same time, like, you kind of get sucked into this so much drama, this adultery, this, you know.
There's no adultery on that show. What are you talking about? Everything, that's the most moral show in the history of television.
Yeah, with the drinking and the smoking. Yeah,
the
totally.
Fornicating.
There's a lot of fornicating on that show.
Yeah.
So, oh my God. But yeah, I mean, it's just, there's so much to that show that, to me, as a bachelor, in a sense, is kind of interesting because, well, I like gin, and they drink like every like 10 minutes in that show.
At least
between Draper and Sterling, and freaking everybody else, it's amazing. And the cast is just ridiculously well rounded, and it's such a great, like, we just talked about how great both the previous two shows we talked about were. This is probably the best acting I've seen in a long time for a complete whole. That makes sense. Like, they all not only just mesh well, but it's believable because no one really outshines one another. No one just stands out as, like, Neil Patrick Harris and the rest of the cast. John Hamm is amazing on that show, but so are so many people. The guy who plays Roger Sterling, love.
Yeah, John Slattery.
Christina Hendricks is amazing as her role.
Vincent Kartheiser is awesome.
Elizabeth Moss is wonderful. I would say the biggest weakest link, and I've told you this before, I cannot stand, and I hate saying this as a guy, I do not know why January Jones is on the show.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, well, I do know that, but she is literally the worst actress I've ever seen.
Well, nah, I won't go that far. There have been some poor actresses on TV.
Go on.
I'd have to think. There have been good moments for Betty Draper, though, like when she had to show a little bit of emotional range when you actually sort of felt sorry for her in season two before she turned out to be such a selfish,
bitch,
seated, not
bitch,
lacking common sense.
Bitch.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I was trying to come up with something more sophisticated, but bitch,
no.
Bitch fits.
No, because towards the end of season three, man, she's just a straight bitch. She's selfish. She's just, like you said, conceited. And just doesn't think outside her own stupid little box. She's spoiled.
I was going to mention this just because you mentioned Mad Men, and I had kind of forgotten this. Maggie Siff is on Sons of Anarchy. She is the female lead outside of Katie Sagal. She's, you know, she's on there all the time. She's a regular, has been since day one. She played Rachel Menken on the first season of Mad Men, if you're familiar with that character. That's actually the show. She left Mad Men to join Sons of Anarchy. And she's been on it since, and she is absolutely spectacular on both. The Rachel Menken character was awesome on Mad Men, and the Tara Knowles character on Sons of Anarchy is the same. Just wanted to bring that up since it was a point of reference.
Yeah, she was really good on that show. Just free will, doing what she needs. She's like pretty much, to me, like the opposite of Don. But their chemistry works so well together on that show. And a lot of things that he does on that show just kind of works. I mean, just what is it, the next season, season two, where he was hooking up with Jimmy's wife, was it Bonnie?
Oh,
redhead,
right,
the old woman. Oh my God, that was such a good storyline. And then the car crash, and then the whole thing with Peggy's pregnancy, how that was handled, everything. Dawn's character is probably the most intriguing character I've seen on TV, I would almost say ever. I really can't think of another character that had so much to him.
There's a real short list. I mean, the Don Draper. If you, what else would you even throw in that category? Maybe like a Jack Shepard.
I was thinking exactly Jack Shepard, Jack Bauer,
Dexter Morgan.
Yeah,
something like he's on the short list. And then when you watch Sons, you'll see the same thing in Jax Teller and Walter White on Breaking Bad. But yeah, I mean, Don Draper character is going to go down in the annals of history, and it's going to be talked about for hundreds of years. They're going to be, you know, when people talk about cliches about Jackie Gleason from The Honeymooners or John Wayne or, you know, as we get older, George Costanza or, you know, Rachel from Friends or whoever it is, Don Draper is going to be mentioned in all sorts of random statements, and it's going to be redone over and over and over for the rest of your life and your children's lives. It's never going to be forgotten. The Don Draper is an iconic television character.
His delivery is so well done in this show, but then, like, his presence, how smooth he is, how revered he is also by, like, so many people in that office, and then that they know he's going to be that guy. He's going to be the closer. One of the best moments to me was the cigarette campaigns and the carousel for Kodak.
Carousel is my favorite.
How he tells a story so well in his pitches is just it's so amazing. It's so unfathomable. Like, no one else can do that. He was made for that role. And it's weird to think that it seems like John Hamm's been around so long. He seems like a Brad Pitt, like, where he's been around forever, like 20, 30 years. Hamm's really only been acting for like 11 years.
Yeah.
Mainstream-wise. Before that, he was a drama teacher at a university in Missouri. So it's really fascinating how that show just picks somebody out and just builds around him. He's like the quarterback of that show. He has so many great supportive players. You know, you got I just forget his name. I love Duck. I love Duck so much.
Duck Phillips.
Oh, God. Duck's such a great character, too.
And we both agree, one of the great voices ever.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Him. And then you got our love for, what's our girl's name? Peter's wife, Peter Campbell.
Oh, Allison Brie.
Yep. You got that. You got Cosgrove. Yeah, Harry Kim Crane Cosgrove. is occasionally good on this show. He looks like a fat Clark Kent to me. But yeah, Salvatore is a great character too. Kinsey can go away. Kinsey's probably the one character I'm like, I get it.
Paul's the one that everybody you just kind of roll your eyes. Not because his performance is bad, it's just that character's not likable.
It's just annoying. He's so up his own ass, it's just ridiculous. But Lane has come out big time too. I love Lane Price.
Yeah, I mean, I've liked Jared Harris for a long time, and he did a short stint on Fringe during its first year. That was a real important role to the movement of the story into something more than a week-to-week thing. He's freaking great, and the Lane Price character has become better and better, I would say, as time had passed. I think that, you know, at the end of season 4, it might have been at his strongest part. I mean, he's great. He's absolutely great.
That confrontation between him and his father was just ridiculous. Like, just old man just straight struck down. This is like grown man. He's like in his late 40s or early 50s, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
And he got struck down by a cane in his face, being demanded to go back home. And this guy's like he's a partner of a friggin' like advertising firm. Are you kidding me? Like, the drama that goes on the show and like how dark they can go just is like a whole other like level. That's just I can't like imagine a better show right now for me until I watch Breaking Bad and Sons of Anarchy.
You'll see the same thing I do. Those three shows, it's hard to say which one's better because they're all so damn good. But yeah, Mad Men still stands at the top for me. I was gonna say that. What the hell was I gonna say? Related to what you just said. Matt Weiner, who obviously created Mad Men and is, you know, the writer and director, all that. He came from The Sopranos, and there was a quote that I've heard a long time ago that said that you can tell the quality of a show or movie by the quality and level of the children that act on the show. And Kiernan Shipka might be the best child actor I've ever seen on TV. Like,
Who's
she's
that?
unbelievable. Don's daughter.
Sally?
Yeah, she's unbelievable. Like, she's better than January Jones.
Yeah, that's not saying too much. But you know, she is
She's
actually
awesome.
really good. But that's another thing where it's kind of like the Kenzie thing. Like, she's great, but man, I hate that character sometimes.
I mean, she's a kid that you can understand that character though, because of what she's going through and who she lives with,
Oh yeah.
and what her life really is. And
You got a shitty ass mother and a shitty ass marriage, and then of course you want to be with your dad all the time. But dad, obviously he's got a lot of fornicating to do. Just saying.
the part that people miss about Mad Men, and what you really should think about when you watch the show, particularly if you haven't at this point, is the attention that is paid and the way that the characters react and the way the show moves from a storyline, plot, and tone standpoint based upon the time period it's set. Not just the idea that it's in the 50s and now in the 60s, but what's actually going on in the world during the season that you're watching. Like, you'll get every once in a while, you'll see something that does happen, the Kennedy assassination or whatever like
That
that.
was a great episode.
Yeah, it was. But if you really think about, if it's in, 1967, for example, you can, think about what was going on in the Israel-Palestine conflict and all that kind of stuff, and you see a shift. You've seen the shift now between, it really began in season three, but it's become more prevalent in season four. Don Draper and Roger Sterling and Bert Cooper and some of this old guard is slowly seeing their power stripped away in favor of this new, more free America. And you can see that they are trying to rebel against that. That's why you keep seeing Roger Sterling, for example, basically look around and say stuff as if basically he doesn't matter anymore. He doesn't. At times he doesn't act like he cares. Bert Cooper sits around and drinks or leaves or whatever like that and things like that. And it you can see on their faces that they know that, and they are told as actors, and Weiner makes it clear that the show is supposed to reflect the time. It's not supposed to be overtly political. It's just supposed to reflect how these people who are used to a certain way of life are seeing it shift in the most dramatic way that it ever shifted between the 50s and 60s. And that gets manifested in the character of Midge and what goes on in Greenwich Village and all that kind of stuff early on in the show, and some of the stuff that's been taking place later, and how blackface might have been funny at the beginning of the show, but surely wasn't nearly as funny in season three, and was designed to kind of make the viewer uncomfortable and remind you how far things are going, and at the same time remind you that time is moving on this show. It's not that season three, between season two and season three, it's not 1 month, it's years. And they make a point, whether they say it or not, to let you know on that first episode how much time has passed, so that you can look at a calendar and say, all right, what took place here? What music was popular here? What was the main ideas that were coming out here? Was it Marxism? Was it this? Was it that? And that kind of leads you to understand how not only the characters operate, but how their advertising works, what they're advertising, what matters. Like the idea that cigarettes weren't all that good anymore for the first time in a long time through the process of the show and stuff like that. That's the kind of thing people don't necessarily mention. It's just another reason that Mad Men is such a spectacular show, that it's not just a show on the level, it's a show that really takes into consideration the time in which it's supposed to be set.
Absolutely. That was well said. Anyway, your next show. You got a comedy?
Oh, man.
You gonna bring it back around? We did comedy, drama, drama. We're gonna end it on a comedy together.
Yeah, too much Kevin Dillon.
No, there's no such thing.
Well, you said drama, drama. Well, CBS sure thought so.
And what did I say? What did I say? That show's gonna go, and what took its place right
Rules
away?
of engagement.
Damn right,
Old standby.
they always got rules in the game just in case. They're
They
like,
probably wish they had kept Gary unmarried one more year.
I bet you they wish they had kept
New
shit
Adventures
my
of
dad
Old
says.
Christine.
Shit my dad
Oh,
says?
no, I don't think so. I don't think they want any part of that show sticking around.
They're gonna bring back Reba?
What comedy could I do? Help me out.
Parks? People watch Parks?
Okay.
Not according to Big Bang Theory ratings, but whatever.
Well, yeah, nobody watches anything compared to Big Bang Theory ratings at this point. By the way, we love Big Bang Theory, so that's not supposed to be a dig at them.
No, absolutely
We've been
not.
a fan of that show forever. We could easily have done that as one of these four. But okay, I'll do Parks and Rec. We both caught that around the same time. What was that? When did we watch that? Spring, summer?
Somewhere on there, because I was during my Netflix binge too, and
Yeah, it
that
was during
show.
spring because we caught up before the end of season three.
Yep.
That show is in season four now. If you like The Office, you should really be watching Parks and Rec. And if you only watch one, even though I think The Office is in much better shape right now than I thought it was going to be, and I like what they've done, and you and I have both discussed that on this podcast before, I think Parks is by far the better show. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because it's so much more fun to watch.
I would 100% agree with that.
I don't cringe as much as I watch The Office at times. And lately, I haven't done it because Michael Scott's not around. So like Scott's tots,
Oh my God.
I hated that episode so much. Oh my God,
Oof. That was hard to
couldn't.
get through. You made me watch the second half of it for you, and you know how much I hate that too, because sometimes I have to look down and like stop Curb Your Enthusiasm 15 minutes in and like recollect myself before I watch the back half. Especially the season finale where Larry David's making fun of Michael J. Fox and doesn't realize that it's all because of the disease. Stuff like that. Like it's just tough to watch. But I think that Parks it's funny because the main thing about The Office that really made me like it, I mean, I like Carell without question, as do you, but the main thing that drove that show for me early on was Dwight Schrute and Rainn Wilson and that kind of off the wall character that was based off the based off Gareth. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. Gareth from the UK version of The Office. And you know, Jim's obviously kind of representative of us in certain ways, except we're not with Jenna Fisher, and that's a shame. But the Dwight Schrute character, just that kind of ironic character, that kind of character permeates throughout Parks and Rec. There's some kind of weird eccentrics in The Office, but in Parks and Rec, it's a bunch of caricatures, like Ron Swanson, who is one of my favorite characters on TV, and you know the ultra conservative that he is, and the way he does stuff. Have you caught up with that? You have, haven't you?
Oh yeah, I've stayed
Did you
up.
see the Rangers episode when he brought out the book? He's like, I wrote it all. It just says, be a man.
Yeah.
I want one of those Pawnee Rangers hats. But,
Oh, that was badass when Andy wanted to become one of the Girl Scouts, whatever they were called.
what were the goddesses? Pawnee goddesses?
Something like that.
Yeah. And then, actually, Swanson might be my second favorite character on the show because of Tom Haverford. Because friggin' Aziz Ansari, that you want to talk about a role somebody was born to play?
Oh yeah.
Good Lord.
What's great about his character is like they basically let him be him.
Yeah, it's like his comedy act.
Yeah, 'cause they even mentioned that like he's from South Carolina, which he really is from, which is
Right.
great. Because what was it, the episode, what was it, where him and Wendy were getting divorced? And like, well, we got married for a green card. Oh yeah, because you're from Pakistan? I'm from South Carolina, damn it.
She's from Canada or whatever it was, right?
Then everyone goes, wait, what?
And then I was never the biggest fan of her on Saturday Night Live, but Amy Poehler is brilliant on that show. The Leslie Knope character is really good. Really, from top to bottom, everybody's good. Aubrey Plaza is awesome. You know, her character's good. And then the one that we didn't like in season one,
Andy.
Andy Dwyer, has become
He's
great.
like my second or third
Yeah, he's great.
favorite character on that show, really. Because he's just so lovable. Like there's something about him. He's not a huge slacker anymore. He's just, you like the guy so much. You want to like hang out and have a beer with this guy. I do.
Yeah, I'm
Next to
cool.
Ron.
Yeah, Rod'd be awesome.
What's it, the one where Tammy One comes in and they're doing the drinkathon and they're drinking
Oh,
like his
yeah.
mom's like special batch of moonshine or something.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, he would tear. It's like that thing we used to tear off the paint off jet engines.
We used to strip the paint off of fiberglass boats with that. And like
Yeah.
Leslie drinks it, and within like 2 seconds, she's like falling over drunk.
And at the very end, Ron's, all right, enough! And he takes like the rest of the bottle and just chugs it down like it's water. Like it's nothing to him. I'm like, yeah, that's right, that's my boy.
No, yeah. Somehow I didn't know that Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally have been married for a decade. That kind of made a lot more sense as to why she's been on the show several times.
And she works so great on that show.
She works great on any show.
All right, you can stop.
I like her a lot. Kind of like Mike Francesa likes Brandon Inge. I kind of always had a little thing for Megan Mullally. Didn't really watch Will and Grace, but I kind of liked her. Anyway.
Leslie and Tammy too. Mary Boff, Kill, Go.
And that's what I was about to get to. It was funny. Like, one of the things that drew me originally when I looked at the trailer or watched commercials and didn't watch it, but I was like, I kind of should watch that, is that Rashida Jones was on it. Mm-hmm. Daughter Quincy Jones. Something I'll never forget again.
After I told you that, and you were like,
I had no idea. But she's probably the character I could care less about.
And it's not that she's bad.
No, it's just everybody else is so much better.
Well, it's like the fact that she's like the most normal person on the show. And that's sort of disappointing. Because she's so laid back, chill, and all she does is kind of, for a lot of times, she just sits and observes.
She's Jim Halpert, just not to the same level. It's not as entertaining.
No. By any means, no.
But then they brought in two new characters to the show, and both of them have been great additions.
Out of the park. Seriously, I love Rob Lowe's character.
Man, him doing the video for the obesity thing.
Diabetes!
I think we nailed it, Dan Perkins. Let's do it 10 more times.
And then he did it like 3,000 more times. Ridiculous. Oh my God, this season, I'll let you know, I was catching up with Parks. I texted you, I was like, I've just been distracted
by the biggest scene
I have ever seen in my entire life. I don't even know if that has anything wrong with it. I was just distracted by the largest penis I have ever seen on a human being. It is Jerry. Because that doctor's face is so priceless. Like, oh my God.
And I got to tell you, Ben with the nerd stuff is awesome. Him in the Batman costume. Oh, treat yourself.
At the very end, he's like, Ben. He comes out in the Batman costume and resets their
fixes it. Was it he fixed their computer?
Oh, he like reset their modem.
That's it. But he was in the full suit.
Yes. And he's like crying in it later. He's like, this feels so good.
But what the Tom was like, talk about some nerd stuff. Like, Game of Thrones, you probably like that, don't you?
He's like, yeah, I do, but you know what? And then there was one, the very beginning too of this season, where Tom goes, he's like, hey, I brought some nerd stuff for you. I was like, what do you mean? I thought you might find this fun, the crunchies numbers. Ooh, numbers is fun.
Yeah. I mean, the show doesn't take itself seriously, but it's brilliant. It's freaking great. Anybody that's not watching that show is so badly missing out. That to me is the funniest show on TV.
But you know, you said it right though. Each character is like a really good caricature of something, because yep. Rob Lowe being a super huge health nut and very energetic, clean cut, straight arrow guy. Like, there's nothing deceiving about this him whatsoever. When he's a politician, there's nothing wrong with him.
No, he's not a liar. He's not anything like that. He's just annoying as hell.
Yeah, but he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
I mean, dear God, he is such a nice guy. And Perkins. Anyway, but my favorite episode with him so far is the one where him and Ron are making the cook-off.
Oh, yeah, the burger.
And he makes that, like, super healthy. And I'm sure it was good in something like that soy/...
Well, they loved it until they tasted Ron's.
Yeah, because Jerry's like, oh, is there oregano or asparagus? He's like, yes, it is good palate, Jerry. And then, like, you know, what's the big lady's name? I can't remember her name.
I don't ever remember her name either.
Well, yeah, she was on it and she was doing it too. And then the Ron's like, here's mine. There's no ketchup. There's no mayonnaise or anything.
Like meat on bun.
You can put on if you want. I don't care. The minute they've been into it, Rob Lowe's here. Chris is going, so really, oh my God, this is way better.
That was great in the one when Ron ended up going to visit, going up to visit Rob Lowe, and Ann was with him. Had a whole deal with the bacon and eggs.
Went to
go visit his favorite restaurant. And it had been shut down for code violations.
What was it, the other restaurant with the I want all the bacon and eggs you have in the back.
Yeah. Give me all the bacon and eggs that you have. Well, you may have thought I meant a lot of bacon and eggs. What I said was all the bacon and eggs that you have. Do you understand? And then God just shakes his head.
I love what was it, the how much he loves April and Tom and Andy for just basically just being slackers.
Yeah, because he hates government.
Yeah,
Because.
and so when like April wanted to be his assistant, he's like, I can't think of anybody else more wrong for this job you hired.
Fired.
Tom,
Wasn't
when he's
that
leaving.
the episode with the circular desk? And
Oh God.
he had to talk to people, he just like would wheel away from them.
Around and around and around. So good.
It
You
doesn't
can't.
hurt that clearly nobody on that show has any shame.
What's
They'll
that?
do whatever they're told to do, full
Oh yeah.
bull. Like clearly none of them say, "No, I'm not going to do that. My character would never do that." Like they all go way off the deep end. It's freaking great. That show is candy to me. It's so easy to watch. So well done. The cast has everybody on it has great chemistry. I laugh out loud at that show consistently week to week. It's just brilliant. It's freaking awesome.
Well, that show, kind of like the last show that we're going to get to that we both absolutely love and no one's watching, is that show is one of those shows where it's like sort of like The Office, where they do those, you can tell it's those outtake moments a lot because they're sitting there just kind of they're improvising a lot and they're giving you the best of what they're editing. So to think what the hell's not making the show is just, I want to see those extras in DVDs. I really do, just for that. Because I love that kind of stuff. I love that in Reno, especially. Yes,
Hey,
right.
something I just think of Dangle, and I read Netflix because Netflix is doing their own TV
Gareth
network or
Barbet!
whatever. And Netflix is doing their own or planning to set up their own TV network. And Arrested Development, if it doesn't find a home on Showtime, is likely going to be on Netflix's thing or whatever. And they were talking about Reno is the next to be renewed. And what I'm thinking to myself while I'm hearing this is, there's another show that a lot of people really like that there's a rabid fan following that got canceled long before, and the entire cast has said they would come back and do it again. You guys might want to revive that one. That being Firefly.
Oh, why did you have to bring the tone down of this
Well,
show?
now think about it. If they're bringing back Arrested Development, cult hit, ratings challenged on Fox forever. They're gonna bring back Reno. Then why wouldn't they bring back Firefly if Fillion and all those people still want to do it, and Whedon would still want to write it, which he does? You tell me. I mean, there's a brown coats convention yearly in this country.
It's amazing that how many episodes aired? Nine?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, because like the box that has 14 episodes and there's like three. No, it's like 11 aired, but so sporadic, so sloppy how that show was given out, man. We could just go on about Firefly for a long time. We really could.
Yeah, we're going to do a Firefly cast down the road. We've talked about it, but we're going to prepare for that one because we could go on and on and on and on and on about it.
But
All right,
no. No.
to recap, How I Met Your Mother, Sons of Anarchy, Mad Men, and Parks and Rec. We're going to do this again because we have, there's a lot of great TV that you might not be watching, but those four shows, you need to find a way to catch up, or you can Netflix every one of those shows, I do believe. The ones you can't, you can catch online. So those are four to watch. And now this fifth one really does need your help.
And if you don't watch those shows, jailed.
Oh yeah, Fred Armisen episode, season one or season two. Watch that one. Parks and Rec. Believe it or not, jail.
Jailed.
Great show, great show. All right, fifth show. This is one that is so ratings challenged. It has been since the beginning, but it fights now the biggest comedy on TV, which is it
Community.
is The Big Bang Theory that it has to compete with. But yes, the show is Community, and created by Dan Harmon, who is brilliant. And if you ever read like some of the stuff that he has written outside of the show and stuff like that, that's why Community is what it is. But give a little idea of what Community is, because it's not just a show about some people in a community college.
Well, in a sense, it kind of is. I mean, that's the
Yeah, it
basic.
is, but that's not really why people would watch it.
No, it's, I mean, you put it perfectly. It's basically a joke of a TV show that just kind of spoofs on pop culture. It's a, what'd you call it, a meta?
It's what the term is meta. Yeah, it's basically it's show within a show. It'll break down the fourth wall. It's like Deadpool comics or people that look at the screen and talk to you in the middle of a drama or something like that. But in this case, they spoof on or reenact or do tributes to a lot of things in pop culture. A lot of it nerd related, so right up our alley. Like, what have they done? They've done Star Wars.
Then Star Wars, they've done just a lot of, they've done Dungeons and Dragons theme.
Just this year, they've done Doctor Who, which was awesome. They've done a lot of comedy stuff. They do a lot on Cougar Town, Lost,
What was the space episode?
Operation Space Time.
Yeah.
They've done some stuff on Lost. They do claymation, like making fun of Rudolph and the Island of Misfit Toys. Just everything you can think of. Pretty much, if you can think of it, they've done it. Or they're going to do it. Like there'll be two or three different references, usually one film, one television show, or two television shows, and maybe some kind of live action scenario that takes place in every episode. And it's another show like Parks and Rec, like Mad Men, like Parks, How I Met Your Mother, like Sons of Anarchy, where the cast chemistry is outrageous.
This is no stranger to that by any means.
No, not at all. You may not care for the soup on E, but that should not dissuade you from understanding that Joel McHale is great as Jeff Winger on Community.
What's funny about this show is he is a he's now getting to that joke on himself, because the first couple episodes he plays that leader, that inspirational role, gives that big long speech in the end, like, guys, come on, just get it together kind of stuff. And then later, like, all right, I'm gonna make a speech, and I'm sure you guys are gonna follow along, or just that. And he's kind of just a joke on himself, but that's what makes the show so good, is like, it's so funny and outlandish and cartoonish at times, but it's not over the top where you're like, oh my God, I get it. It's still watchable at like all feats and all times for me.
It's not campy. It's not. It never takes itself seriously, but it doesn't. It's not so stupid that you can't enjoy it.
Right.
And then there's one character that represents pretty much the sole reason that we decided to do this podcast, and that's Abed.
You
And the
bet.
reason why is because all this guy is pop culture knowledge and pop culture enthusiasm and pop culture obsession. My favorite show, knows everything about it, knows all the characters, can relate any situation to a specific television episode. There was a whole thing on Who's the Boss, for crying out loud. They've
Oh,
touched on
man.
everything. And then,
Who?
his favorite show was Cougar Town for the longest time, and his quote about it is always, five seasons in a movie. Like, always. And then when that show was off the air, he didn't know what to do with himself. He found like they gave him the British version of Cougar Town, and then they played off the joke and played off the idea that British shows are only six episodes per season, and it had only been one season, so he got into it in the sixth episode. He's like, "This is my favorite show of all time." He gets to the end of the sixth one, says to be continued, and then the show was canceled. So then he's back in the dumps again. So there's stuff like that. They do the right, they spoof on the right stuff. It's basically the best comparison I have for Community is it is a live action Family Guy.
Yeah.
Without like some of the family stuff that's in a Family Guy, but like the way the references are done in Family Guy, but in more of a, it's not a flashback. It's kind of happens in front of you. Because in Family Guy, you remember the one that we always go back to is a Take On Me. You know what I'm saying? Aha. Right.
Take on me.
Like that
Yeah.
was all a flashback or whatever. Community's not usually like this, them going back 3 years in time. It's stuff that happens that could be flashbacks on Family Guy that take place in some kind of a logical time continuum in a 30-minute span on each episode of Community.
Abed's got more than just like that depth too, but he has the just his mind itself is so intriguing, because the first Halloween was with the Bat Abed, where he's just totally into character. He doesn't give a shit. It's Halloween. It's a Halloween party. He's just, once he has a costume, I'm not a man. And him and Troy messing around. And this is what really lured me into the show, was those outtakes between the two of them is so funny. Is so good to hear, be like, because you see that improv, you see how many takes they do before they get it right. And it's just them off the tip of their tongue each time, with the whole like, Hey, Batman, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Wonder Woman, have you ever?
All day, all night.
Yeah. There's the chemistry and then the now the off-screen, like, big-time friendship from Donald Glover and Danny Pudi. You can see it on screen, but they play off each other. They can just go back and forth. They're both huge nerds. If you ever see them do interviews and stuff, they know all this random knowledge, you know, kind of like us.
Trying to bed in the morning.
It's just freaking awesome. Have you seen the most recent one? The one where they had the six the dice?
That was by
awesome.
Far
that was
my
one of my favorite
episode.
Ones.
No, that is my favorite episode because that has so much like depth and like nerd knowledge.
Yeah.
Is just insane. It is insane how much that has to reference, like, just a glimpse of like the multiverse itself. The people you just kinda don't understand unless you read comics or you watch Highlander or you think about this kind of thing where like
Highlander.
even if you watch like Back to the Future, like
right.
every like choice and decision you do in your life changes a piece of your timeline.
But of course
everything
the
changes.
Thing about that is it's not just the dice roll. It's like the foot that Jeff Winger stepped into their apartment with could have set off different timelines.
Right.
But they picked the dice to tell the story, which is kind of ironic in itself. And then the whole brilliant – I love the thing at the end with the fake beards. Like,
yeah,
they're going to, like, embrace the evil timeline.
Yeah, it's like, Britta, I lost an arm. Pierce is dead, and you have blue hair.
Yeah.
Big deal. And, yeah, but that thing is just basically how it happens. Is what was the game they were playing?
They were rolling the dice to see who was going to go get the pizza.
Right, but what was the
game? They're playing Yahtzee.
Okay, it was Yahtzee. So basically in Yahtzee, you have a six die, whatever. You throw it in, you know, and you make a decision, roll, whatever. But basically, there's seven characters in the show, including Chang and Dean, whatever. But there's seven main characters of the show, six rolls per die. And this is what I thought was brilliant at the very end, the last non-roll, when Abed grabbed it. He's like, wait a minute, Jeff, you're playing this, da-da-da. Explaining that it's just manipulation to not go get the pizza himself. And then they're like, you should get the pizza, which was, you would think, I guess, the real outcome. But anyway, but each role in like impacted their decision in their life somehow or another, whether it was them hooking up with one another or, you know, Alison Brie shooting Chevy Chase character Pierce by accident or Britta being caught smoking weed and her and Troy hooking up, whatever, or Shirley going nuts. Every little thing impact, and it's so cool because each die had a different universe story to tell.
Based on who it was that got picked to go downstairs to get the pizza.
Exactly. And that to me was so fascinating because it really does happen in life. You think about it. Like, every little thing in your life could be different if one thing changed. Hence the butterfly effect. It's so cool to think about. Like, if I didn't lose my job a couple of years ago, I would have never gone back to school. If I didn't go back to school, I would have never got a job at the bank. If I didn't get a job, you know, it's just that stuff adds up. Every little thing in your life adds up. And it's so mind-blowing to me to know, like, they did that kind of episode. And they put so much effort, so much time. And it was so fun to watch.
Oh, it was great. It was definitely the best one I've seen this year. It might be. I mean, it's up there for me. I really enjoyed it a lot. I saw it as it happened, and it was just – It was back to like I had told you the couple weeks before featured Ken Jeong a little more than I thought it needed to, and that one got back to the main crux of why that show was good, and it was just so smart. It all took place kind of in one little place, and it was just great. It really was. That show is one thing that show knows clearly is who its audience is and who is supposed to enjoy it, and it caters to that audience. But it is a show that if you have not seen it and you listen to this podcast and you're like, I remember that. I like that. I wish they'd talk about episode 26 of Remington Steele from season 2. You need to effing watch Community now.
Or if you like Dinner with Andre, you watch this movie.
Oh, my God. That was awesome.
Yes.
God, that
was Fiction.
Awesome. Yeah, Pulp Fiction. I mean, I could sit here and give you a list. A mile long of the stuff that they have referenced intentionally on that show. How about the Indiana Jones diorama?
Oh, yeah. And each time, like, it affected it somehow?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But,
and then when they use guest stars, those guest stars, they usually know where they're from. And those characters kind of have certain characteristics that their characters would have. Like Michael Kenneth Williams, who played Omar Little on The Wire, who's the biology teacher this year, kind of has some Omar in him. And Josh Holloway, who played Sawyer on Lost, he kind of sounded like Sawyer to me.
A little
in
bit.
In a lot of ways.
And again, to reiterate this, he needs to be on Justified.
Yes. If not that, he needs to be on True Blood.
Don't think that's going to happen, but I can see that.
I would much rather see him on Justified.
Speaking of True Blood, what the hell happened to Bruce Campbell? I thought he was supposed to be on this season. People made a big deal that he was going to play Bubba, the like Elvis vampire.
I don't know. Probably the thing happened where Burn Notice is a better show.
Oh, and he was like, oh, wait, I'm going to need my own TV movie?
I'm Sam Axe, mofos.
Fuck that. I'm staying right here.
But yeah, Community is awesome, and the ratings are really bad, but they're still saying it likely may get renewed because Prime Suspects last week is probably this week. They're running it tonight, tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night. They're giving you four chances to see the episode. You know why? Because nobody's taking the one chance they're giving you on Thursday nights at 10 p.m., so they're about to axe that. They've already axed Free Agents. They've already axed the Playboy Club, and that's not all. You know, then they've already renewed Whitney.
What?
Yeah, they gave it a renewal after the second episode. It happened about 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
And I have watched them all, surprisingly enough, but I think I'm done.
Just can't stomach it?
It's just... it's a sitcom from the 80s that is just not very funny. It's like, if it was Seinfeld with a female lead that focused on nothing but relationships... girl talk and just wasn't funny, even though it had a laugh track that was from a live audience. And it's just not a very good show. I mean, Up All Nights on Wednesday nights, it's a great show, but there's so much better to do. Thursday nights at 9:30 when that's on, you know, you got the back half of Person of Interest on CBS. You got Thursday Night Football. You can prepare for It's Always Sunny in the League on FX. There's so many things you could be doing other than watching what I think is a subpar effort, especially considering Whitney Cummings created and writes Two Broke Girls, which is a great show.
That's a
phenomenal awesome
show.
And I told you didn't get to see it as fast as I did, that first night I was like, all right, I like this. I like this a lot. Not just because they used one of my favorite songs of 2011, Second Chance by Peter Bjorn and John as the theme, but... it's freaking great, but I think Whitney Cummings in her own show is bad. And then there's the other thing. It's like, Whitney would be better if you liked her character, but you don't. Like, there's not anything there to make you like that show.
Here's the thing I keep hearing everywhere and I keep reading about, even from you, is like, she's not approachable on the show?
No.
Like, it's kind of like what we were talking about with Hodge, Mother, and everybody else. Like, those characters are fun to watch because you can kind of relate. I don't think people want to relate to a bitch, from what
Whitney,
I can understand
Whitney
from them.
Whitney is rigid. I think it's the word I would use. She's cold and rigid. Like, she wants everything to go her way in the relationship, but she doesn't want to show any affection. She wants, you know, him to apologize for every little thing he does. And then she goes and talks to her two girlfriends, one of which is in this great relationship and one that's, like, on the rebound looking around and stuff. And they'll tell, like, a vulgar joke or something that just isn't funny. Like, Two Broke Girls is the most vulgar comedy I've ever seen on CBS, hands down. Like, some of the things they say on there, I can't believe they say on CBS, you know, prior to Safe Harbor Hours. But they're funny.
Oh, you mean straight up like, I was masturbating.
Just stuff like that, or like references to... have you seen them all yet or no?
I have not seen last week's and whatever is airing right now.
You got to see the creepy dude with the, I have an air conditioner. Does it work? Oh, it works. Then starts blowing on him.
Oh, I liked it was when, was it Caroline? She was in the back, like, for some reason she was licking her finger. Max comes back, she goes, you may want to stop that. Why? Because you're in Olgie's thoughts, and as you made it to a spank bank. He goes, congratulations.
See, like, stuff like that, like, you don't see that. Like, even How I Met Your Mother has been raunchy at times. Nowhere near as raunchy as Two Broke Girls. But the difference is those jokes are clever and funny. And it's the same people. I mean, Whitney Cummings writes those. You tell me, but the stuff she says on her own show, to me, is vapid and lame. And her as a main character is just not – she doesn't even portray herself in an attractive fashion. Like, you don't see her like, man, she is really hot. You don't even have that. It could have been – I think it had a chance to be really good. But to me, it's not. But apparently the ratings are decent enough that they've already given it a full 24-episode second season renewal after 2 weeks.
What do you think about Two Broke Girls, too, is like – Those two girls, there's nothing you really want to like hate on them for, nothing like you don't either want to strive to be or what they're striving to be. Because this is what I like about the show a lot, is at the end of each episode, they do that money total.
Oh, I think that's awesome because it gives you something to look at. It gives you something to watch.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is.
Because you have so many shows where they don't touch on just that factor in the world. You know, you have like Modern Family, which is like, you know, three successful families for the most part. You know, what is it? Phil's in real estate. You know, Mitchell's a lawyer, and why did I forget his name? Ed O'Neill's character.
He's like a sales manager.
He like owns his own company though.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Speaking of which, did you see Wednesdays?
Which one was that one?
Julie Bowen in the red dress.
Oh my God!
God, I love Julie Bowen.
She's
I just
still
had to
got
say
it
that again. It gets better. I think she gets more attractive every year. Like I loved her in Happy
Gilmore.
She's
like one.
But my God, she is so beautiful.
You never get those mental images of Happy Gilmore out of my mind.
Neither will I. But some of the way she's looked this season in Modern Family is better than she looked last year, and she was beautiful. I mean, she's beautiful and really talented. But yeah, I know what you're saying. Two Broke Girls has its own identity because it prides itself on the idea of struggling kids.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, granted, their storyline at the time is really, like, outlandish, like them breaking into whatever Caroline's, like, whatever mansion the other week and stuff like
this
that.
This Narnia?
Yeah. But it's fun, you know? Like, there's nothing, like, just degrading about it. There's nothing, like, about going, oh, these girls aren't role models. No, they have a dream. And it shows, you know, that they want to build a business together. You don't see that in a lot of shows these days. It's just like, you know, How Much Mother? They all have jobs, but you don't hardly ever see them doing their job. It's like their off time or them goofing off. This is like them working for a lot of time, and then they do the other side shit. And then at the end of the episode, yeah, we're putting away money because we got fucking shit to do. And that's good and inspirational, I think, for like people to watch and go, oh my God, what if they make it to this 250 whatever thousand?
You know? I bet you at the end of the first season that thing's gonna end
gonna
up
go
like
to
jumping.
Zero.
No, it's gonna jump to like 20 grand. Like they'll get something. Something will happen. It won't matter because they've got to earn so much money. But and the other bonus is it's so good to see Garrett Morris back on TV. I miss Garrett Morris from his days on Martin and Amen and all those shows he used to be on.
Even for like the 2 minutes he's on screen, they're great.
It's awesome. Him and Kat Dennings have perfect chemistry.
And yeah, they play off each other so well. And then the karaoke episode? He's like, oh my God, if I hear Teenage Dream one more time, I'm going to slam my nuts in this drawer. And then, what was it? She goes over to the table with a girl's about to get up and sing the song. She goes, look, if you don't do this, and obviously I am really watering down the joke because her delivery in this show is fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
With the whole, like, look, I get it, da da da, but if you don't do this, I'll, you know, comp your cobbler. And then the manager goes, what are you doing? Saving Earl's nuts.
I wear one of these when it's cold. You wear one because of Coldplay.
Aww.
Yeah, her delivery is great, and she sits there with a deadpan look on her face and just insults customers. And it's a good show, and I think that it's a really good, like, I'll watch How I Met Your Mother, wow, How I Met Your Mother, and then I'll go right into Two Broke Girls, and it's like two completely different shows that fit back-to-back to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it works out really well, RIP Mad Love, but...
Oh, would you stop?
And then, you know, 2 and a Half Men and comes on, and I immediately don't watch that, but... Two Broke Girls is awesome. You should watch that. You should also watch New Girl and Up All Night. You should also watch this coming Friday, season premiere of the final season of Chuck.
Yes, this Friday!
As well as the premiere of Grimm, which I'm actually more excited about than I thought it was going to be. Just because I kind of like the trailers. I'm going to give it a shot. Also, last night was the premiere of Once Upon a Time. Highest rated show on Sunday night on network TV in a while. I'm interested to see it. Didn't get to watch it. Was, you know, busy doing some other things last night. And The Walking Dead, second episode last night. And here is an interesting phenomenon that I wanted to bring up before we close out is I have never seen a television drama or comedy that runs and then they have a 30-minute post-game show for each episode starring Chris Hardwick, who hosts it and takes calls from viewers about the episode they just watched. I have never seen this before, and I thought it would just be a one-time thing. No, it's weekly, and it's got Robert Kirkman on it each week, who, of course, wrote The Walking Dead, has written the comics since 2004, wrote writes Invincible, Haunt, all those kinds of things. And he's on there, and he talks to the show and talks to the viewers of the show for 30 minutes after it. That is either the most brilliant thing I've ever seen or the most arrogant thing I've ever seen. Because Mad Men doesn't get that. Breaking Bad doesn't get that. The Walking Dead is a great, great show. Don't get me wrong. I haven't gotten to watch this season yet. I have them all on DVR when I've got a little bit of time. But that is astounding to me when I saw that. I was like, what is this? Oh, this is a 30-minute talk show starring Chris Hardwick of Nerdcast fame and who used to host Singled Out along with Jenny McCarthy on MTV, along with Robert Kirkman taking phone calls from viewers about their thoughts on the show and in particular episodes. That is astonishing.
That is actually pretty brilliant.
It certainly makes that show look important. Like, if you were coming in, you weren't sure how you felt about it or hadn't watched it, if you realize it has a 30-minute post-game show, you would immediately think that show is probably something I should watch because it's important enough to have a 30-minute post-game show. So that's – I don't know what that is. But, man, Chuck cannot get here soon enough. Friday, I will be Rets to go. Rets to go. And then next week, Tower Heist. Just because I think it's going to be funny.
I really am looking forward to Tower Heist.
Oh, we're back to Two Bro Girls. The manager at the restaurant's hilarious. The, like, out-of-touch Asian owner who's trying to be hip all the time.
You really like that?
What?
You really like that?
No, I think he's really funny.
I think it's annoying as all hell, but okay.
To be sure. I mean, we can disagree.
I'm Asian! It's offensive!
No, not that. I'm not talking about that. Just like the fact that he's like way out of touch in terms of dance moves and stuff like that. Because he's an older guy. Not because he's Asian, because he's an older guy.
No, it's
because
he's Asian.
I don't think so.
He's not even old.
If I took it from your perspective, I would find it offensive.
Probably. Which is why I'm putting my perspective in. It's offensive. But it doesn't like make me not watch the show. It's
so
just kind of like
masturbation to half the audience.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Exactly.
Oh, I thought you meant like you knew what I was doing right now as we were doing this
podcast.
What?
Congratulations to Buffalo Rodeo for their second place finish in RevFest Battle of the Bands 2 weeks ago.
Woo!
They were robbed, even though Technology versus Horse is awesome. They won, but Buffalo Rodeo, you know,
you
those kids are on the right
just
path.
Just right.
What?
So they were placed just right. They weren't robbed.
That's true. I mentioned that only because, and I haven't decided on which one it's going to be yet, so I can't tell you right off the top, but immediately at the conclusion of this podcast, after you hear the ending music, there will be a full song from Buffalo Rodeo, a new one, not our theme, which is all the same, but probably the second track from their Wanderers EP, which is an awesome song, so you might want to check that out. And again, you can go to buffalorodeo.bandcamp.com to pick up their album or their new EP, and they are apparently already working on some more new material, so
Wait, good for them. Is that the name of our theme song, All the Same?
Yes.
I like it. All right, well, this has been a good show. I like this.
Been a good show.
Two shows.
Oh, one other thing I was going to correct. We were having fun with our We Out thing. Yeah, the way we close the show. Last few weeks, we haven't had as much fun with it because we're trying to say it over the top of each other and it doesn't come out right. So I'm going to succumb to you because you're the first one who did it and came up with it for the show, and you will hear the voice of Andrew Van saying "we out." You will not hear me, so that you don't hear "blur out." You'll actually be able to understand the words that are coming out of my mouth.
Wow, that's I don't know what to say to that. I guess I feel honored. Maybe, I don't know.
Anything important this week? Captain America tomorrow is important.
Captain America tomorrow. We got the Georgia Tech game this Saturday for Clemson at Atlanta, like I mentioned. You said you won't be commentating for another 2 weeks, right?
They're on the road this weekend at Louisiana Monroe.
All right.
So I will be at the cut watching football. And then, of course, next Saturday, the big LSU-Alabama game. Biggest game of the year. Both of them will come in undefeated because both of them have a bye this week. So No chance of that getting ruined. WKU will host Florida International next Saturday, and I will be doing commentary for that game. Looking forward to doing it. I think I'll also be on pregame, or I'll be on Red Zone Radio next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific time.
Next.
Along with Jeremy Brown as we make up the Rush Hour
Renegades. Coming at ya.
Is that a Sorry. Cat?
Hey, that's mean. I don't know. By the way, I will say this. I do want to end this in 2.5 minutes because How Much Mother is coming on. I don't have TiVo or any DVR anymore.
You don't?
Nope. Got rid of that shit. Wow. Well, you know, being broke helps. Anyway, but I do want to say I saw Real Steel over the weekend.
Did you agree with me?
Oh, my God. How wrong was I?
Shit was good, wasn't it?
Movie is so good. I cannot wait to get that shit on DVD.
That's I forgot about that. I wanted to mention that. I was like, you cried at the end, didn't you?
No.
Oh, come on.
I did.
What are you, made of stone?
Yes, I did not cry at the end. What is wrong with you?
I teared up at the end of it. I'm not ashamed.
Last movie
of it.
I teared up at the end was like Ladder 49, but no.
Please.
Hey, he died.
You were such a liar.
He died. Joaquin Phoenix died. You watched a movie, tell me you don't tear up. What is wrong with you?
You were such a liar. If you didn't cry, if you didn't cry, if you didn't cry in Up, you are a comic.
I didn't cry in Up. Okay, I cried.
Yeah. No, yeah, there's no excuse for how good Real Steel was. I loved Hugh Jackman in that movie.
Yeah, go see Real Steel. If you want something fun to watch, go watch Real Steel. But anyway, I'm going to end this note here so I can go watch some TV and go do some things. But I am Andrew Van of Greenville, South Carolina, with my co-host,
Jason Martin of Anytown, Your Town, USA, a.k.a. BG, Bowling Green, Kentucky.
That town specifically, yes. We are the Moops of the CTR Certifiable Total Recall Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at CTR Podcast. Email us at ctrpod@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, either one of us, at JMR100 at Facebook, or find me, Avan360, or find our Facebook page itself, Certifiable Total Recall. And this has been another edition of Certifiable Total Recall. We out! Now I gotta go take a shit.
I'm gonna take a breath.
Shit, that comes first!
Now, I will stop the recording. Now.
Too much.